This is the new home for Cheryl Fritz, 1320 WILS, the only Lansing radio station live in Lansing every morning, live in Lansing every afternoon. Welcome to Fritz and Friends with your host, Cheryl Fritz.
Welcome back, everyone, to Fritz and Friends. Cheryl Fritz here along with producer Mark Price. We are coming to you on 1320 WILS and streaming live on 1320WILS.com. As I mentioned just before the top of the hour, I got my blue card today. I got my permit to carry a pistol. And the class that I had to take before getting that permit was taught by the next gentleman, on our next guest, who we've had on the show a couple of times on related issues. He is Mike Jarecki, who owner of the ammo dump in Williamston. Good evening, Mike. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I've been kind of fascinated. I'm a curious person by nature, I guess, and I've been kind of fascinated with this whole process of getting a CPL. And why don't we even just start with that? That I always heard it was a CCW, and that's actually what you can be charged with if you don't do it right.
Exactly. Carrying a concealed weapon is usually the term that law enforcement and the courts apply to somebody who's illegally carrying a gun. But it has been so universally accepted, even before this law went into effect back in 2001, it was extremely hard to get a general permit. They had what they called hunting and target permits, which just let you carry one to a target range or during the hunting season. But a regular concealed carry permit was really difficult to get. Mostly it was reserved for people, former or retired police officers, and that was about it. And the term was just a CCW. You had a hunting and target CCW. And like you said, technically that's the reference that's usually used to the violation, not to the permit itself. This one's called a CPL. It's not a concealed weapons permit. It's a concealed pistol permit. As a matter of fact, it's limited to pistols. It's not for weapons. You can't carry a ball bat or nunchucks or even a knife with it. It's for a pistol only.
And what happened in 2001 with the law that changed things?
Well, they passed what they call a shall issue law. They took it from, it used to be, it was really subjective whether you got a non-restricted concealed carry permit so that you could just carry a handgun with you was largely up to the concealed weapons board in each county, as somebody from the sheriff's department, the prosecutor, usually a big police department, representative from those three, and you had to convince them that there was a reason for you to carry. This law is what they call shall issue. When you go buy a gun from any dealer, from any gun shop, you fill out a form that asks you if you're under indictment for a felony, if you've been convicted of a felony, are you a fugitive from justice, have you been convicted of drug abuse, have you been convicted or committed to a mental institution, have you been dishonorably discharged, is there a court order restraining you from anything, and you answer those. If you answer yes to any of those, you can't buy a gun. That's basically the criteria now that they use for the CPL. If you're a citizen of the state of Michigan, you're over 21 years old, and you're one of the good guys, you don't have any of the problems I just read off, that's what they call a shall issue permit. They have to issue the permit. You don't need to give a reason anymore. All you need is to be able to prove that you're one of the good guys.
Well, I do want to back up just a moment and give people your background. You teach these classes now and so forth, but you have a long history in the military and law enforcement and with the fire department as well.
Right. Spent a couple years in Vietnam, and I spent 12 years as a police officer. And I retired from the fire department in Lansing as a battalion chief, and I've been a paramedic since when they started the program in the state in the late mid-70s.
Now, a few of the class I took was amazing, and I'm still absorbing all of it, I have to tell you, Mike. But a couple of things that really stuck out to me were, first, there was talk of mental preparedness and so forth, and going through the chapters of the tool of last resort. And I think sometimes people misconstrue and think, oh, you get a gun or a concealed permit, and you think you're all that, and it truly comes out the opposite of that. You don't feel that you're all that. You have an incredible respect for the responsibility that you now have.
You hit the nail on the head. It's responsibility. We know now the Supreme Court's ruled twice in the last few years that this is an individual right. It has nothing to do with a militia, with a National Guard, with the military, or with the states. It's an absolute individual right. But just like every other right, there's huge responsibility that comes with it. You have a right to free speech, but you can't stand up and yell fire in a crowded movie theater. You have a right to peaceably assemble, but you can't start a riot. I mean, virtually every right has some limitations on it and a lot of responsibility. I mean, this one's no different, and you could make an argument that it's even a little bit more pronounced from the responsibility aspect.
Certainly. Now, the Castle Doctrine was one point that came up, of course, during the class that I had heard of, but didn't really understand it until after we discussed it. If you could just kind of review for folks who may never have heard of the Castle Doctrine and how that enters into the subject matter.
Castle Doctrine goes back to a Supreme Court decision back in the 1880s that had to do with this very thing, is with your right to be able to defend yourself in your home. That case is kind of drawn out, and we probably don't have enough time, but for years, the Castle Doctrine was based on the Supreme Court ruling from a long time ago. In the last 10 years, many states, and Michigan included, decided that we need to make it legislative law, and basically they took what was the court ruling and just wrote it down as a law, as something, you know, a bill number, so there's a specific reference to it. But the Castle Doctrine basically says that inside your home you have an absolute right to defend yourself, that you have no obligation to retreat. Again, defend yourself is the key, always. As I pointed out the last time we talked, the primary criteria is fear for your life. You can't use deadly force to defend property. The only thing you can use it for is fear for your life. If you're in fear for your life, that's what our law is based on, and our CPL law takes that outside the home and just applies it in general. If you have a legal right to be where you're at, you have a legal right to stand your ground, and you have a legal right to defend yourself if you're in fear for your life. But the part about the home goes back a long ways. It's just that for whatever reason, states in the last few years, many states have decided to make it legislative law.
Okay. Another point that really struck home with me, and I had for some reason never looked at things this way, was what is referred to in the book that we got is the reasonable man standard, and that really left an impression on me.
Yeah, what that comes down to is the simple way, one simple way of looking at it. There's probably several ways, but one is put yourself in a jury box. Like the Lansing police spokesman was making an issue that they might charge this 64-year-old man who shot the intruder at 5 o'clock in the morning in his home. If you turn around and look at that, the prosecutor has to convince 12 people sitting in a jury box that this person did something unreasonable, that what he did was not what a reasonable person would do. I can't imagine, if you put 12 people in a jury, that you're going to convince all 12 of them that it's unreasonable to shoot an intruder who's in your home at 5 o'clock in the morning, who you didn't invite in, didn't expect to be there, comes in unannounced for whatever the reason that he was in there. At 5 o'clock in the morning, you would make a powerful case that you're in fear for your life. That's the reasonable person or the reasonable man part of the statute.
Mm-hmm. The tool of last resort, and believe me, I'm barely touching on what we cover in class, but that phrase comes up over and over again, doesn't it, Mike?
Oh, sure, absolutely, and that's just, for you, as you noted, that was a 13-hour class you took, and from beginning to end, we hammered the last thing that you want to do is have to shoot somebody. It should not be the first thing on your mind, but when the situation arises that you have to use deadly force, often it happens in a matter of seconds. It's not like on television. There's no music playing where it builds in crescendo, so it tells you that what's coming up. Oftentimes, especially outside your home, it happens in a few seconds' time. You have almost no time to think and barely little time to react. In that case, it is the tool, even though we refer to it as the tool of last resort. If your life is threatened, that is the last resort. We encourage you, whether the law says you need to or not, we no longer have this duty to retreat, the retreat clause that said if you could avoid the fight outside your home, you had to retreat. Now our law says if you have a legal right to be there, you have the right to stand your ground. Just because you have that right doesn't mean it's the best thing to do. Always, as we pointed out all the way through the class, if you can avoid the confrontation, if you can avoid the necessity to use deadly force, it's to your advantage to do so, as long as you can avoid it without putting yourself in more jeopardy.
The class, as I said, was amazing, and you know, it sounds like I'm you know, trying to butter you up for some reason, but I learned a tremendous amount and was certainly prepared to talk with the gun board about getting this permit. Are you getting more and more folks in these classes? The class I was in was full.
Yeah. Actually, since the last presidential election, most of the classes have been full. One of the fascinating things is this class has been around a long time. Remember, the name of the class is Personal Protection in the Home.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of legal shootings happen inside the home. More than half of them involve a woman, one way or another. The fact that works that way, when we first started doing the classes, when the law went into effect in 2001, 2002, we'd have 18 or 20 people in the class. There might be two women of them. There are two women in the class. As you notice, now the classes are half and usually more than half women. In the last two or three years, women, for whatever reason, have become more aware, more self-empowered, more accepted to the notion that they're responsible for taking care of themselves. Whatever the reason is, the classes are always at least half women, and most of the time more than half women now.
Well, it was an amazing class, and I encourage anybody who has an interest in this to take a good look at it all. And it was quite an experience. I feel like just got the permit today, and I feel like I still have an awful lot to learn. So I'll be visiting, and I will be chatting with you again on the air soon, I assume.
Okay.
Okay, thanks so much, Mike.
Nice talking with you, Cheryl.
You too. Mike Jarecki, owner of the Ammo Dump and teacher of the NRA class that you need to take before you get a concealed permit. So that's all set for me as of now. We'll be back with more Fritz and Friends after these messages.